I'm going to call this meeting of the House Early Childhood and Family Supports Committee together to order for Tuesday, April 18th. So the first item of business today is going to be a hearing on House Bill 3447. So I'm going to open a hearing on House Bill 3447. Zena.
Chair Lively, members of the committee, House Bill 3447 prohibits an instrument that restricts the use of real property as a certified registered family child care home or as the premises of an exempt family child care provider participating in the subsidy program. It prohibits a condominium governing document or guidelines from prohibiting or restricting a unit or owner from using the condominium as a certified or registered family child care home or as the premises of an exempt family child care provider participating in the subsidy program. The Dash 1 Amendment specifies there is no prohibition from adopting or enforcing governing documents or guidelines that regulates parking, noise, odors, or use of common property, provided certain provisions are met. There is no fiscal impact and no revenue impact. The Dash 2 Amendment specifies prohibitions against restricting the use of common and shared spaces. It specifies there is no prohibition from adopting or enforcing governing documents or guidelines that regulates parking, noise, odors, or use of common elements or activities that impact the cost of insurance policies, provided certain provisions are met. It exempts housing for older persons. There is no fiscal impact and no revenue impact on the Dash 2s.
Okay. So we have two proposed amendments, the Dash 1 and Dash 2, so I'll hear from the proponents on the bill first, and then we'll invite the others up and we can talk about it all at the same time. So Andrea, Stacy, and Kate, do you want to come up and talk about the core bill? If not, I mean, it's up to you guys.
You see this guy here?
Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Lively, members of the committee. Thank you for your work and interest in ensuring that families have access to quality child care in the communities where they live and for the opportunity to provide testimony in support of HB 3447. And if it's okay, we will talk about the Dash 1
and
the Dash 2.
And that's fine, while you're up here.
Okay. Sure. The Dash 1 Amendment, a bill to allow for licensed and regulated in-home child care to operate in communities governed by homeowners associations. Oregon AFSCME Council 75 represents both registered and certified in-home child care, also known as family child care through Local 132, child care providers together. As members of this committee, I'm sure you've already heard quite a bit about Oregon's need for additional child care access and availability issues. HB 3447 is one way that can address this problem. As we deal with an increasing population and housing shortage all over Oregon, multifamily settings and planned communities that are governed by homeowners associations are standard in addressing our housing needs. Child care needs should be considered along with other important considerations that come with building these homes and communities. HB 3447 will end the ability of HOAs to prohibit child care businesses from operating in these communities. The Dash 1 Amendment ensures that child care, like all other residents, must comply with other rules that govern common spaces, parking noise and odors, and ensures that HOA may not create other rules that could restrict a home from providing licensed or regulated child care. In-home providers know that being a good neighbor is important and is often worked into their day-to-day lessons with the children in their care. AFSCME is opposed to the Dash 2 Amendment for two reasons. First, we're concerned that the language about insurance could allow an HOA to easily create a prohibition by asking the insurance provider to write a letter stating that they would indeed raise the rates if a child care provider was allowed in the community. Second, families in residences where there are shared walls, ceilings, and floors require affordable quality child care, and we're concerned that the language in Section 41B could lead to the prohibition of child care in multifamily residences. We appreciate that it doesn't exclude the license-exempt regulated child care, but we do have concerns about limitations this could place on families receiving subsidy care and professional development opportunities for the providers. Currently, there are incentives for parents to choose licensed care through lower copays. Additionally, for providers, there are bonuses for participating in SPARC, formerly the Quality Rating and Improvement System, and generally, license-exempt providers are paid less by DHS than licensed providers. By limiting providers through prohibiting them the option for becoming licensed, you're limiting their opportunities for higher pay and more professional development opportunities. For parents, you may be putting them into the position of having to pay more when they can't afford it and limiting their access to care that meets their family's needs. Family child care settings are an integral part of our child care system that helps meet these needs for children and families. They can have licenses that allow for operation outside of the center, the normal center-based hours of 7 a.m. to 5:30 or 6. They're crucial for parents who work hours, whose work hours may be evenings, weekends, or even overnight. They provide more personalized settings where children are exposed to learning opportunities through their teachers, as well as being with kids of other ages. Family care providers are often already known, trusted, and likely match families' cultural norms and values because they are in the family's neighborhoods. Licensed family child care settings are regulated by the state, have regular inspections from the Early Learning Division's Office of Child Care and the Department of Human Services. The providers, any person living in their home, and any staff they may employ are required to submit a background check that now includes fingerprinting, and all staff are required to complete a basic level of training each year. This training includes basic health and safety, as well as developing curriculum for their programs that include educational and physical activities. They have rules about providing for proper activities, both inside and outside each day, and for supervising children at every moment those children are in care. Children are not left to run wild or simply be placed in front of a television. For SPARC rated, formerly Quality Rating and Improvement Systems, providers' training hours and expectations increase with every additional STAR rating they receive. Rules require that the home where the child care is provided is the residence of the provider and cannot be a place that is solely a child care business. Providers must allow licensing specialists and DH inspectors in their home for health, safety, and other rule compliance checks. Providers must know and comply with local, state, and federal laws related to and around immunization and communicable diseases, child safety systems and seat belts in vehicles, bicycle safety, civil rights laws, and the American with Disabilities Act. Providers must also ensure that they take appropriate measures to protect children from vehicular traffic. They must have food handlers cards and be certified in infant and child CPR and first aid. Their homes must be kept clean and maintained for a safe and healthy environment. It is a violation to even have a cup that has been used for water to be left in the sink. We understand the concerns that children might be noisy or create other wear and tear on property. I have a 12-year-old of my own, and she does that frequently. But given the rules that providers must follow, we know that they do make good neighbors. Additionally, when children know that there are rules to follow and expectations about being a good neighbor that they must meet as well, they learn those rules and are exposed to opportunities to prepare them for school and interacting in the world in which they and we live. HB 3447 is not the only solution needed to help ensure families have access to affordable quality child care in their communities. However, it is one way we can help remove barriers. AFSCME urges your support of HB 3447 and the Dash 1 Amendment. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Lively, members of the committee. My name is Stacey Callen. I'm with SEIU Local 503. I'm here in support of House Bill 3447 and the Dash 1 Amendment. SEIU represents regulated subsidy child care providers. This is sometimes referred to friends, family, and neighbor providers, or previously exempt child care providers. Our providers usually have a close relationship to the family and are caring for the children at the request of the parent. They can only care for a maximum of three children, and many times the arrangements are just for a set amount of time. Also, many providers provide child care outside of traditional hours. We find that they tend to just meet these unique needs to families, many of them working shift work, sometimes before school and after school care. Our providers are subject to state and federal health and safety rules, a lot of which Andrea outlined in her testimony. That does help provide a roadmap for childcare providers to have an environment that's welcoming for everyone. In addition, our providers are required to have at least one monitoring visit from the state to ensure compliance. We believe all of these components provide a framework to ensure that neighbors' rights are respected while at the same time meeting some of the child care need in the state. And we believe that we really should be looking at ways to expand opportunities for families to receive child care and not limiting it. This, again, doesn't necessarily solve the solution of availability of child care, but we believe that this really is an important component of meeting family and provider needs. The data is really clear. Oregon doesn't have enough child care providers to meet the demands. Oregon's also one of the most expensive states for child care in the nation. And we just think that it's essential that in order to help families thrive, we have to make sure that we're helping them find and afford child care in Oregon. I won't repeat Andrea's testimony, but for the same reasons that she outlined, we also are in opposition to the Dash 2 amendments and, again, are in support of the Dash 1 amendments. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Lively, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kate Newhall, here today on behalf of Family Forward Oregon. The beauty of going last is that everything has been said before you, and you can say ditto. We are here today also in support of House Bill 3447 and the Dash 1 amendments. We think this is a very common sense approach and just one of the barriers in the number of providers that we have being removed. So we do want to be supportive of this bill and also recognize that while it's certainly not a solution to the shortage of providers that we have in the state, it's definitely one of those barriers that we can remove and increase some of them. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Doesn't look like it. Thank you very much. Representative Vile, I apologize for holding you up, but I appreciate your patience.
Good afternoon, Chair Lively, members of the committee, Rich Vile, House District 26, Shoals, Sherwood, and surrounds. As you just heard, this bill seems to have become a referendum on child care and not about homeowners associations, and it's critical that we understand that this does affect homeowners associations, and that's why I'm here to advocate for the Dash 2 amendment. As you may expect, homeowners associations typically do push back when asked to have mandated exceptions to their ability to adopt rules that control their environment. We already have a number of those kinds of circumstances. In fact, in this body earlier this session, we adopted one with respect to the watering of yards. Mm-hmm. However, it's important to recognize that when we do this to homeowners associations, we have an absolute effect on their ability to maintain the living environment that folks expected when they bought in. Those living environments are dictated by what's called the declaration. A declaration is a master deed that is adopted with respect to the property, and it basically tells the rights and liabilities of the owners. Among those rights often are some regulation. The Dash 1 amendments, I need to say that I'm somewhat disappointed that we didn't have the opportunity to discuss the Dash 1s or the Dash 2s with the folks that you just heard testify. I wish we had had these discussions, because the Dash 2 amendments are very important for this reason. All condominiums and homeowner associations, and understand those are two different statutes. Chapter 100 covers condominiums. Chapter 94 covers planned communities or non-condominiums. All of them have some projects where the units are attached and other projects where the units are unattached. Developers have the ability to choose between those two, but it does not dictate how that project looks. So you can have a townhouse-style planned community, and you can have a townhouse-style condominium, or you can have single-family unit condominium, as well as you can have single-family unit planned communities. those kinds of projects, those two different attached and unattached projects, need to be treated somewhat differently. The Dash 2 amendments make it clear that you can't adopt a rule that would prohibit the use of the unit or lot for the type of project that was, or excuse me, the type of daycare that was described a moment ago as being family friendly, directly to family. For the broader ones, the restricted use and the certified uses, we are asking in the Dash 2 that those be more carefully looked at with respect to attached units. So in other words, if you've got people living side by side sharing walls, then the association has the ability to affect rules a bit differently than they do for the ones that are just single family detached units. It is undeniable that we have a problem with respect to child care in Oregon. No one, I think, with any sense about this topic would disagree with that. But we do not have any evidence that tells us that the homeowner association industry and the regulations that are adopted by condominiums and planned communities are the real problem there. All we're doing with the Dash 2 amendments is trying to make sure that these associations can continue to adopt reasonable rules, protect the owners, without prohibiting the use of these projects for child care facilities. I would urge your adoption of the Dash 2 amendments. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative.
Chair Lively, members of the committee, my name is Jason Gross. I'm an attorney that represents condominium and homeowners associations across the state of Oregon, and I'm here in support of the Dash 2 amendments that Representative Vile to my right proposed. I'm also here on behalf of Community Association Institute, which is a national organization. I happen to be on the board of directors of the Oregon chapter. It's an organization of folks that live in condominium and homeowners associations, managers, professionals that serve homeowners associations. And I just really want to underscore what Representative Vile said. I don't think that there's any debate about the importance of having access to child care in the state. I don't know as much about the research that's been done on that particular issue, but what I can say is that it's important that folks that live in condominium and homeowners associations have the right to enforce reasonable rules. And representing a couple hundred of these entities across the state, what I see is a need for folks to be able to enforce parking rules, foot traffic, sound issues. When my clients have an issue with any sort of home business, and this really doesn't apply to child care, it applies to any sort of home business, those are the big things that come up. And I just wanted to make one brief comment in relation to insurance costs. I was listening to the testimony of some others this morning, and some of the communities that I represent have gymnasiums, they have swimming pools, they have recreational facilities. And I do think that there would be a tangible impact on the insurance costs, which of course is a cost that all the members of the neighborhood bear. So I just wanted to add that, and again, encourage you to support the Dash 2 amendments. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Chair Lively and members of the committee, my name is John Gibbon. I'm an attorney from Portland. I operate a business called Common Interest Owners Legal Assistance, and I represent people who live in homeowners associations. And the reason that I do that is because I live in a homeowners association, a large one in Southwest Portland. We have over 90 units in it, and we have private streets, private sewer, private water, and we pay collectively, even though the units are single family, we pay collectively for sewer and water. And I will tell you, I'm a member of a committee that's called the Condominium and Homeowner Association Working Group. I think they let me in because I'm kind of the guy that balances off the developers. I'm wearing a Sweeney hat. I also was land use chair for the Southwest Neighborhoods Coalition for a number of years. So I really balance them off. The point I'd make is I support maybe a little more conditionally, the two amendments, because I recognize those as being very specific items that we can work with when I represent a homeowner who wants to get her daycare approved. And I think we really need the specificity that this bill, the Track 2 amendments provide, because the discussions break down and what's reasonable to one person may seem totally unreasonable to somebody else. So if I've got specific criteria to work with, I feel confident that that will help us get to providing the child care that we need. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Hayden.
Thank you, Chair Lively. Thank you for the opportunity to ask a question. And this is out of my wheelhouse, so catch me up. My understanding is that in homeowners associations under ORS 93-270, age is not one of the restrictions that we have. So, again, out of my wheelhouse, so stop me when I get this wrong. Age isn't a restriction, so in theory, you have senior residential living, 55 and over, 65 and over, whatever. The change to this, either in your dashes or the original bill, would that then guarantee that one of those residential homes in a, I don't know what they call it, the 55 and older place would then potentially have daycare? No, I misunderstand that.
Chair Lively, Representative Hayden. Under the Dash 2 amendments on the second page, line 4, it specifically does not apply to planned communities that provide housing for older persons, and that under ORS 659. So what the deal is this. Federal law prohibits a homeowner association from establishing an age restriction unless it's established by that HOA that it meets the needs of a certain population, 55 or older, 61 and older. This would allow those special HOAs that have that designation to be able to say no to a daycare facility.
In the base bill?
In the Dash 2s.
Well, I'm asking about the base bill if the Dash 2 is not adopted.
Base bill, no.
Okay. So in the base bill, those 55 and olders could be required or prohibited from stopping a daycare.
Chair Lively, Representative Hayden, that's correct.
Thank you. Other questions of this panel? Okay. Thank you very much. So I have two more people who have signed up to speak. So Tracy Lang and Michael, do you want to come up at the same time? Okay, thank you. And just introduce yourself for the record, please.
Sure. Good afternoon. My name is Tracy Lang. I live in Benton County, Philomath, Oregon. I am here in support of this bill today. I'm also the constituent who worked with Senator Boquist on Senate Bill 1051.
Thank you.
Maybe for a little personal background story, most of you, I'm sure, are aware of the child care challenges that we have, right? We're only meeting 60-70% of the need, and there's studies that have come through sanctioned by the state of Oregon, produced by the Oregon State University. We haven't made progress in 10 years, right? We're filling 17-18 slots out of a goal of 25, no matter what we do. So it being kind of an organic civic issue means it's not going to get solved civically, organically. We have to set some different kind of policy that allows the state to move forward, and let's let the, you know, the lower levels figure out how to work through this policy and work together. I appreciate a lot of the testimony today about working together, and I'll tell a quick version of our testimony about how things don't work well together. My wife runs a child care home. We live on 5 acres. We have about 12 kids in the home. And she has a 4-star rating. She does everything that the state of Oregon has asked her to do. She's participated in surveys about how to how to engage in faith-based curriculum, how to serve the needs of special needs and inclusive care. And I said she's a 4-star rated. She's the only 4-star rated facility in the city of Philomath. However, after being in operation for about 4 years, we got a little visit and a letter saying that we were violating the business clause, which we hadn't interpreted that we were running a commercial kind of a business in the middle of 5 acres. However, that ended up being the sticking point. It cost me over $3,000 of attorney fees just to get my right to have a hearing, to speak my case in front of the board. And we testified and talked about cerebral palsy kids and the reason sometimes they're a little loud or some of the other non-mainstream children is because they don't really know how to ride a trike. So he's kind of banging it up and down on the porch because he doesn't know how to ride it. But he's out there playing with everybody else. And we brought all that testimony. We talked all about those things. We talked about figuring out how we could try some kind of reasonable accommodation. But we got no feedback on what the real issues were. We didn't get a chance to talk about traffic. We didn't get a chance to talk about noise. We just talked about the value that we were providing to the community. And the quote-unquote feedback I got was, you are doing great and wonderful things. You just can't do them here. You're doing great things for the community. We're just not sure it's great for our community. They voted that we were against the rules. That was done. They voted to invoke fines. That was done. And we had no say in this process about how to work together, how to carpool, right? How to buy a bus and go around and pick up. Maybe some parents might like that, right? It's like, yay, the bus is here for my 3-year-old. And that's the driver that was the start for a lot of this impetus was, we have a crisis. Let's come together. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about what things are reasonable. They may or not be reasonable for one, not reasonable for another. I appreciate the insurance side of things. It would be reasonable to indemnify an HOA for certain parts of common use. It would be reasonable for other restrictions that may impact neighbors. I have a little challenge with the common wall type of thing, right? What if the person has one baby or two babies, right? Which is a huge need, infant child care in the state of Oregon. Does that represent an issue? And nevertheless, so that's kind of the end of my story. I'm sorry if I took too long, but thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much for coming.
You're welcome.
Michael?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Michael Salvaggio, I'm here representing the Sun River Owners Association. Daycare facilities do make good neighbors, and that is why Sun River has not explicitly prohibited that use, or I believe any uses. But it does, the organization does spell out certain compliance rules and regulations that we expect residents to abide by, addressing time, place, and manner of these activities. Regardless of the home occupation under consideration, we would generally oppose any effort to take away the association's ability to put very reasonable sideboards on these types of activities. We're very concerned about the broadness of the bill as introduced. We do like the -2 amendments and would be fine, I think, with those. Those are sufficiently broad for us to ensure that we have the ability to spell out time, place, and manner. We feel that the initial bill and the -1s could be interpreted a little strictly. I think the -1s only allow for very certain sideboards to be put on, but this is just generally a pattern that we look to. Is we're not looking to prohibit any specific type of activity. We're just looking to make sure that we're able to put the types of reasonable sideboards on that were described by previous witnesses. In the interest of time, that's all I'll say right now.
Okay, thank you. Any questions?
Yes.
Oh, Representative Brocksmith.
Thank you. Sir, what board did you go in front of? You didn't mention, you just said in front of the board.
This was the director board of our association.
Okay, gotcha.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you both.
Thank you very much.
Sure. Okay, James Barta. So we're going to have to wrap this up. We got a big agenda, but James, do you want to?
For the record, my name is James Barta. I'm the Legislative Director for Children First for Oregon, and I can be brief because I have already spoken to you about the need and the expenses of child care. And to put, it is in the state's interest to make sure that we have all the facilities that are available. And while I appreciate the work done by proponents of the Dash 2, we don't need to have a situation where, in effect, we can drive a child care provider who is providing for infants right out by charging too much in interest or making too many roadblocks. So I believe it's the interest of the state, just as we often have preemptions and other items, it is the interest of the state to have a to ensure that homeowners associations also make available this service that so many in our communities need.
Representative,
very short. Okay. Yeah, so help me understand. You are supporting the Dash 1 or the base bill or?
Dash 1.
Dash.
Question?
Brocksmith, yeah.
Thank you. Your last comment was interesting. I don't believe that the Dash 2's limit the Dash 2's don't give homeowners associations, they give the ability to regulate, but I think your comment was that they would take them away. So maybe a little rephrasing of the comment would be interesting.
Chair Lively, Representative Brocksmith. I fear, and I am not as much of an expert as many of your previous witnesses on this, but I fear that the ability to regulate is, in a sense, the ability to force them out as well.
Follow up. Thank you. We regulate things all the time. We had quite the discussion of regulating car seats earlier in this session.
Yes, we did.
Flashbacks.
And having lived in an apartment complex before or having dealt with homeowner associations before, I believe that we need to give the neighboring homeowners all of their ability to live a peaceful life as well. Gladys, who's 85 or 90, who's a retired child care provider, might want to, want to live her days in peace.
Thank you, Chair.
Representative Pack.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to differ with you a little bit there.
Oh.
If you buy your house and you pay to be there, you ought to be able to do with it as you choose. Just my opinion.
So you weren't different with Representative Brocksmith.
Yeah. Oh. Actually, I was, but
with all okay, I'm
my
just trying to keep track
I love
of
you down there.
No problem.
I love you down there, but I'm going to beg to differ.
I'm just trying
I
to keep
I think that if you, if you own your home and you're paying to be there, you ought to be able to do with it as you choose, and we have an issue. And we need more child care providers, and that's just my opinion, though. So
okay.
Leave it at that.
Bynum.
I'm inclined to ask, when did children become a burden?
Kids can be kids, man.
In our communities, in our homes. I mean, yeah, they're noisy.
That's life.
But that's the essence of why we're here. And I.
Do you have a question for the witness?
I'm just amen and Representative Hack. I don't have a question.
Sure.
I'm sorry, but the question is, when do children become a burden?
Thank you.
There you go, James.
So Representative Hayden,
very short question.
Very short question.
So under the Dash 1 that you are supporting in a senior community where these folks have decided to live together, 55 and older, would your Dash 1 allow daycare provider to put a business in one of those facilities. I'm trying to figure out the balance between seniors that want to live. I'm assuming you're not going to put a daycare facility in a long-term senior living facility,
yeah.
You know, just down the hall. I'm assuming that, right? Is that a safe assumption? But if you have seniors that have chosen to go into this community for, and I love children, but I love seniors too, right?
Very good point.
If you have seniors that have chosen to do that, would your dash one allow the mandate of a child care facility in a homeowners association that was set up for seniors?
Chair Lively, mm-hmm. Members of the committee, I was enjoying the debate until now. But
Andrea,
unfortunately,
Andrea,
if someone can.
Can one of you come up and answer that question, please, that has.
May I come up? Chair Lively, members of the committee.
We need to get the question answered about the dash one.
Yeah, this is.
Yeah, so it does not have the provision that relates to 55 and older communities. Those are in the dash two. Amendments.
Could we do a dash three?
Okay. Do you agree with that?
It's done with a reference to a statute.
Could we?
Yeah, so I was involved in part of the language
Thank
of
you.
This. And,
let's see.
Sorry, thank
yeah.
you.
Thank you.
And it would be reasonable to add the 55 and older portion to the
thank
dash
you.
One. That would
so
be
it's
reasonable.
Not in the dash one?
It's not. That wasn't. It wasn't, that's the reason we have the conversation, right? It wasn't part of the mental thinking at the time, but it was about creating this reasonable way to engage.
Yeah.
The challenge that we would end up with, for example, is that my wife's 55. And if we lived in a community like that, could she take care of one baby?
Yeah.
And the answer may be potentially not, right? That's the way that I interpret some of that. And so
it was supposed to be a short question.
Was it short?
It was supposed to be.
But you now have another short question?
I do, too.
I'm sorry.
No, that's all right.
That's a long answer.
Did you get your answer?
No, not really. What I'm trying to distinguish are the advocates of this bill willing to stipulate that if you have a homeowner association that is built for families and have children there, go for it. We ought to have daycare. But if you have a homeowners association that is specifically designed for seniors, that doesn't otherwise allow families with children there, you're going to allow daycare in those homeowners associations without families having children? I mean, it just doesn't seem to mesh with me.
Yeah, I think in the spirit, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Chairman Lively and Representative Hayden, I think that's reasonable to keep families in the nature of families, and those who have, you know, tried to set their on a trajectory of a different kind of living environment. That seems reasonable to me to make that kind of a concession. Hope that answers your question.
That answers my question.
So, okay, go ahead. Representative Kenny Geyer, I think, had a question. Or a statement or something.
Thank you. No, I appreciate trying to find the mutual ground here. I just did want to say that I don't know if the communities that are meant for people living 55 and older also prohibit anyone from being there who are under 55. I don't know enough about it. I would assume that the homeowners are ones that are 55 and older, but they might have a 25-year-old come back. They might have a great interest in having a daycare with grandchildren. I know there's a lot of multi-generational caring for children that I think is a beautiful thing. So I just wanted to interject that, too. But I'm also appreciate the spirit of trying to find common ground.
Sure.
Are you going to provide?
May I just make a quick comment?
Okay, briefly, we've got to move on. So we got a whole bunch of bills to get done today, and this is it.
I just wanted an opportunity to put on record. So SEIU represents, again, the friends, family, neighbors, and frequently we actually see situations where families have chosen to have a grandparent care for the children. And so my understanding is this wouldn't prohibit that, but I do want to direct folks to the dash one amendments, and the lines 3 through 6, we think, provides language that allows, it doesn't, it just says the section doesn't
prohibit an association from adopting or enforcing a provision, blah, blah, blah. So we think that the information there actually still provides an association or condominium the ability to create appropriate rules around noise and odor and parking. But again, we do want to just recognize that we think, you know, our providers do provide that unique opportunity to allow for someone to select their parent or grandparent to care for their children. And we think that that's an important piece that we should be preserving. And then again, I would just finally remind you that with the FFN providers, our providers, they're only allowed to care for three children at a time. So there are a lot of rules and regulations, and again, health and safety standards and the yearly monitoring from DHS, which we think, again, provides that framework necessary to make sure that folks are being respected. So,
thank question.
You have a question? Representative Brocksmith.
Thank you.
Wait a minute. Representative Hack, did you have a question before I move to him?
I did. Thank you, Chair. I'm just wondering if folks may consider an amendment that takes care of the 50. So if you choose to live in a 55 and over community, because I am sensitive to that, I hadn't thought of that, which is, you know, I think that Representative Hayden did bring up a good point, that if you choose to live in a community that is 55 and over, would you consider an amendment that excluded just the 55 and over community if you chose to live there, but have that in your amendment, but not if you're outside of that?
You know, myself personally, I think that, you know, for the framework that we operate within, that would be reasonable. It'd be a 1.1 or something like that kind of an amendment. And I just want to thank the group for bringing that topic up, because that's reasonable to work through that together.
Thank you. Representative Brocksmith.
Thank you. I just want to point out to Representative Hack that Gladys is my late grandmother, so whenever I'm talking about her, I'm talking about our senior citizens as well. So, but the bus kind of hurt a little bit, you know.
No comment. I'm sorry.
My question is to you, ma'am. If you're talking about these provisions that exist in the lines 3 and 4 of the bill that would allow these homeowners associations to be able to adopt rules that prohibit or these regulations. So is it then what are the dash what specifically in the dash twos do you dislike? Does SEIU, the unions dislike?
I believe in the dash twos, and I apologize, I only have a copy of the dash one. So the dash two, or the dash one, my understanding is it does everything but prohibit, allows to create those guidelines. And the dash twos, I think the concern is that it limits when you're talking about shared walls. And I believe that while dash one provides that framework that's a little bit broader for both individual dwellings as well as shared walls, but I think that the restrictions on the dash twos were a little too broad. So we fear that it would actually prohibit people who live in units that have shared walls from actually being able to provide care.
Follow up.
Sure, go ahead.
Well, I would, and there's plenty of attorneys in the room, but I would consider or use of common elements. A shared wall is a common element. There's really, the way that I see it is the dash two is a good compromise between the folks that are living, the folks that are representing, and we need more compromise in this building. And so I'll be supporting the dash twos.
Thank you. Any other questions before I dismiss the panel so we can decide what we want to do? Doesn't look like it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So I'm going to close the public hearing on this. And obviously, this is a very unusual situation. We ended up, this is the last day, the first day we could hear the bill. I could have said we wouldn't hear the amendments, but I just decided to hear the amendments and put this out there. So I'm going to leave it to this group if we want to try to move the bill, if you just want to, it's up to you. You heard the testimony and the discussion. It's a good bill. I mean, there are good aspects of it, but go ahead.
Well, I think, Chair, one of the things to consider, too, is if we all believe if we agree it's a good bill and it's something we should do, we do have the Senate side to work on a further amendment, too, rather than not hearing it at all, recognizing that we definitely have an issue that needs to be addressed if we feel that way.
Representative Malmstrom.
Yes, I would agree with Representative Hack. I think that if we do try to suggest that we might also include it's a possibility for somebody who's already residing in one of those over 55 things that they're not suddenly said, oh, sorry, you can't have your two kids over for daycare anymore, so they're kind of grandfathered in. But that way everybody knows in the future. But I don't know how we do that.
So I'm going to open a work session, then we can... Oh, is that all right, Representative Hayden?
Recess for a minute.
Okay, you want to take a...
You have the option to send it to rules.
Well, we'd have to ask to send it to rules. I did not ask for that permission.
This goes right to the floor.
You want to take a brief break, Representative Pack?
Yeah, I think we should.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll stand at... Okay, we'll come back into session. So, Representative Peluso, please.
Chair Lively, I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendments dated April 17th, 2017.
Oh. Sorry, wait a minute. I didn't open the work session.
Oh,
that's my fault.
Go ahead.
Okay, I'm going to open the work session on House Bill 3447. Excuse me.
And guess what I'm going to say.
Okay. That's what I want to
know. Chair Lively, I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendments dated April 17th, 2017.
Representative Peluso moves to adopt the Dash 2 amendments dated April 17th, 2017. Is there any discussion? Representative Kenny Geyer.
Yes, I will support this, given it's the last day and it's going to have more discussion on the Senate side. I would have gone for the Dash 1 with the hope that we would find something in between for the communities 55 and older to assure that people can at least watch kith and kin. You know, I want to make sure that people who become grandparents in the middle of this, as I may, I'm in that 55 and older category, all of a sudden may become or want to support. You know, you have your children coming over on occasion. Mom drops the kids off, you know, on occasion, and it may turn into that occasion may be more needed. Sometimes people don't plan ahead and realize that. And I want to make sure that we do, as a family support group here, do everything we can to really support families. So I would have preferred a Dash 1 and tighten it up a little bit on the Senate side by allowing that. But I think either one can have more discussion on the Senate side. So I'm just glad to see this bill go forward.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Does anybody have Representative Malmstrom?
I just kind of want to echo what Representative Kenny Geyer said. I just want this bill to, you know, the concept to go forward. And I do think that people that live in 55 and over communities generally aren't going to be running daycares, but there could be. And I wish we could have had more time to kind of ferret this out, because I think we're all really kind of on the same page somewhere in between here. But given the situation, I don't want to take this bill. So.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Representative Bynum.
I just wanted to say that there is a trend where daycare centers are moving into senior homes and centers, and that has proven to have positive health effects for seniors as well as children. So I think our view can be somewhat myopic. I support further conversation on it. I will support the amendment, but I don't want to send the message that people want to exclude themselves from young children. Some people may, but I think that there are health benefits for including young children in the lives of seniors. So,
anything further? Any further discussion of the amendment? So at this point, does anybody object to the amendment? Okay, if they don't, the amendment stands approved. Thank you. Representative Peluso.
Chair Lively, I move House Bill 3447 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Peluso moves House Bill 3447 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Representative Brocksmith.
Just appreciate the bill.
Thank you. No discussion, then please call the
Representative Bynum.
Aye.
Representative Cade.
Aye.
Representative Hoffman.
Aye.
Representative Kenny Geyer.
Aye.
Representative Malmstrom.
Aye.
Representative Brocksmith.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hack.
Aye.
Vice Chair Peluso.
Aye.
Chair Lively.
Aye. Motion passes. I'll close the work session. Oh, sign a carrier. Is there somebody here that would be willing to carry the bill?
It's your bill.
You want me to carry it then?
Yeah,
okay,
your
then
bill.
I will.
You're the chief sponsor.
I just don't want to, you know, I'm the chair.
Yeah,
I want to give a chance.
You're the chief sponsor of this.
Yeah.
Okay.
We vote you.
Okay. Can we call a roll on that?
If you want.
No,
you're the chair.
You. Okay, so the only other bill we had scheduled for a public hearing today was House Bill 3069, and there's, at this point we're not going to hold the public hearing on House Bill 3069. Again, it's ended up at the end here, and we're not ready to move that bill. So we'll have a chance to discuss the concept in that further once we get through the final days. We'll talk more about what that is, and hopefully by the short session be ready to do something, and by that point we'll have clarity around the budget too, because this bill had a pretty substantial fiscal. So no House Bill 3069. So now, so 2957 is, okay. So now I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2957. Zena.
Chair Lively, members of the committee, House Bill 2957 directs the Department of Education to award grants to school districts. There is a dash two amendment that replaces the measure. It directs the Oregon Department of Education to award grants to enable school districts to provide at least one teacher for every 15 kindergarten students. It requires schools to have a full day kindergarten program, 90% of students eligible for free or reduced lunches under federal guidelines, and capacity in classroom to comply. It allows the school district to apply for more than one grant. It appropriates funds from the general fund and declares an emergency effective July 1st, 2017. A fiscal impact is issued, and there is no revenue impact, and there's a sub-referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, so we just heard this bill. What is today? We heard it Thursday, didn't we? So is there
questions? A little longer.
2 weeks ago.
I don't know. I'm losing track of what's going on. So are there questions about the dash two amendments?
Would you like to? But I'll just make a comment,
yes,
Mr. Chair. I appreciate having worked on this with the good representative to my right. She took a concept that had been brought to me by kindergarten teachers who are really struggling with five-year-olds who are in high poverty, sometimes family distress or dysfunction, often different languages, and trying to get kids who often have not been in any kind of institutional environment where they've learned to sit down, and they end up in a class of sometimes 1 to 30, and on the other hand, we have evidence-based ratios for childcare that say five-year-olds cannot be in a setting with a ratio of more than 1 to 15. So we were hoping that if there is funding available, that we would be able to target funds. And what Representative Hack did with me was to say, all right, this is a good concept. If we're really, really, really to try to narrow it and target it, given very little resources, how can we do that? And so the dash two basically says it's only eligible for schools that have 90% free and reduced lunch, which is a very high bar, and that those facilities also have to ensure that they have the capacity to have a second classroom, because if you divide the classroom up, then capacity may be an issue. So it was a way that we could recognize that out of this committee, we're looking at what's best policy. The subcommittee has to look at whether there's funds, and we all understand what the limitation and the challenge is there. But at least out of this policy committee, we wanted to send this as a message of an aspirational goal of what is best policy in caring for kids in the kindergarten in that transition year into school. So that's my take on the dash two. I want to thank you for helping me narrow it to,
thank you,
to divert, really targeting resources to really where most needed. And I want to thank Oregon Education Association and individual teachers that worked on this bill with us.
Thank you.
I reiterate that.
Okay.
She did. She said it all perfectly.
Any other discussion of the dash two? Not Ripson Paluso.
Chair Lively, I move to adopt the dash two amendments dated February 24th, 2017.
Ripson Paluso moves to adopt the dash two amendments to House Bill 2957 dated February 24th, 2017. Is there any discussion? Any objection to the dash two amendments? Okay, hearing none, the amendments are adopted.
Chair Lively, I move House Bill 2957 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Representative Paluso moves House Bill 2957 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, please call the roll.
Representative Bynum?
Aye.
Representative Hayden?
Aye.
Representative Huffman?
Aye.
Representative Kindergartner?
Aye.
Representative Malmstrom?
Aye.
Representative Brock Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair Hack?
Aye.
Vice Chair Peluso?
Aye.
Chair Lively?
Aye. Motion carries. I'll close the work session. So now we're going to open a work session on House Bill 2985.
Chair Lively, members of the committee, House Bill 295 modifies the employment-related child care subsidy program under the Department of Human Services. So there is a dash one amendment that replaces the measure. It creates a 20-member task force on employment-related child care to conduct a study on employment-related daycare access and availability of subsidies and to develop a plan to expand access by supporting child care providers and providing assistance in understanding health and safety regulations, providing information on opportunities for professional development for child care providers, supporting child care providers and families, recruiting additional child care providers, expanding access to including to families who seek to work or are students, and improving outreach to families who may be eligible. It requires initial report to the Legislative Assembly by January 2nd, 2018. It requires a second report by January 2nd, 2019, and declares an emergency effective on passage. A fiscal impact has been issued, and there's no revenue impact. And there's a sub-referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay. Any questions about the Dash 1 amendment? Okay, Representative Peluso.
Chair Lively, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendments dated April 13th, 2017.
Representative Peluso moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2985 dated April 13th, 2017. Any discussion of the amendment? Any disagreement with the amendment?
Okay. Just make a comment that this creates the task force on ERDC to look at some of the issues that Representative Hayden raised.
Hadn't raised, yes.
So we're clear what we're doing.
Okay, so he's not objecting to the amendment. Thank you.
You don't hear me talking.
So with no objection, the amendment is adopted.
Chair Lively, I move House Bill 2985 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Representative Peluso moves House Bill 2985 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Being none, please call the roll.
Representative Bynum?
Aye.
Representative Hayden?
Aye.
Representative Huffman?
Aye.
Representative Kindergartner?
Aye.
Representative Malmstrom?
Aye.
Representative Brock Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair Hack?
Aye.
Vice Chair Peluso?
Aye.
Chair Lively?
Aye. Motion carries, and I'll close the work session on House Bill 2985. Now we're moving to House Bill 3068. So I'll open a work session on House Bill 3068.
Chair Lively, members of the committee, House Bill 3068 directs the Department of Human Services to conduct a statewide study. There is a Dash 2 amendment which replaces the measure. It creates a resource and referral system as a statewide network of entities funded by the state. It authorizes the Office of Child Care to implement the resource and referral system. It requires resource and referral entities to provide services such as training and technical assistance for child care providers, referrals for parents or guardians seeking services, and recruitment of qualified individuals. It requires resource and referral entities to match funds at or above 10% of public funds received. It permits the Office of Child Care to implement federal requirements and to award grants. There is a minimal fiscal impact, but no statement issued and no revenue impact.
So any questions about this bill? It's been some time ago since we originally talked about it. No questions about the amendment? Okay. Representative Peluso.
Chair Lively, I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendments dated April 13th, 2017.
Representative Peluso moves to adopt the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 3068 dated April 13th, 2017. Is there any discussion of the amendment? Any objection to the amendment? Okay. The amendment is approved.
Chair Lively, I move House Bill 3068 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Peluso moves House Bill 3068 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion of that motion? Seeing none, please call the roll.
Representative Bynum?
Aye.
Representative Hayden?
Aye.
Representative Huffman?
Aye.
Representative Kindergartner?
Aye.
Representative Malmstrom?
Aye.
Representative Brock Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair Hack?
Aye.
Vice Chair Peluso?
Aye.
Chair Lively?
Aye. Motion carries. Now we need a carrier for this bill. I didn't sponsor this particular bill, so do I have a volunteer to carry this bill?
I can do it.
Well, thank you, Representative Hack. I appreciate that. So I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 3068. So we have one left? Okay, and so I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3087.
Good.
Joke. Thank you, Representative Hayden. I needed that. So, Zena, where are we at on House Bill 3087?
Chair Lively, members of the committee, House Bill 3087 creates a family and medical leave insurance benefits program. There is a dash two amendment which replaces the measure. It creates a family and medical leave insurance benefits program to provide a portion of wages to employees. It establishes a family and medical leave insurance fund. It permits up to 12 weeks of benefits per benefit year, and an additional 6 weeks for parental leave. It directs the Department of Consumer and Business Services to determine weekly benefit amount based on wages earned during the base year. It establishes a maximum weekly benefit amount of 130% of the average weekly wage. It authorizes benefits to the self-employed individual. It requires payroll contributions up to 0.05% of employee wages to be paid by employers and employees. It requires employees to provide employer with prior notice to the extent practicable, but no later than 45 days after the first date of illness or injury. It entitles employees to be restored to a position or equivalent position if the position no longer exists and to maintain health care benefits. It allows leave to run concurrently with the Oregon Family Leave Act. It requires DCBS to establish a system for enforcement and appeal of contested cases involving benefit claims. It specifies financial penalties and disqualification from benefits for noncompliance and erroneous payments. It requires a report to the Legislative Assembly by January 2020 in every even number year. It directs DCBS to conduct a study of the amount of contributions self-employed individuals make and benefits received. It encourages sharing technology and creates an effective date 91 days after signee die. A fiscal impact issue has been issued, a revenue statement has been issued, and there's a sub-referral to revenue.
Okay. So are there questions about the amendments or any of the other information on this bill? Representative Hayden.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Lively. So looking at the, again, I love children. I love daycare. I love family leave. But the Dash 2 amendment, I think it's fair to point out that the Dash 2 amendment fiscal impact statement is incomplete, meaning that we are passing, potentially voting on a bill without knowing what the fiscal impact statement would be, and that's a concern to me.
And the bill will, once it completes its journey through revenue, it would have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means at that point. So at some point, that will be part of the bill, and it would be referred to Ways and Means. But I appreciate your concern.
At this point, we have no fiscal impact statement, so we don't know if this is $1 billion or $2.
So just for the record, so we do have the report from DCBS that goes through and talks about the estimates at this point about what revenue could be raised, what the potential liabilities would be in that. So there is information, but that's not a fiscal report. You're absolutely correct.
There is an issue report, just further analysis.
Right. Oh, the fiscal report. We have a fiscal report, just says further analysis is required. Right.
More complete fiscal analysis on this bill will be prepared and the measure is considered in the House Committee on Revenue.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Kenny Geyer.
I don't have a question, I just have a comment. That's all right?
Yeah.
So I just want to thank everyone who's worked really hard on this issue. I know that the proponents of it who brought it to us have worked incredibly hard for the last couple of years on really trying to fine-tune it, get the details down. I know Representative Hack presented an alternative voluntary way to try to get at it. I feel about this as I do about the one that we passed on the ratio, that we're really trying to look at what the best policy is. We know that we have big financial challenges, and I would hope that we meet those challenges and can get this off to the start this year. But I do really compare ourselves to how most of the rest of the world works. And I think about early childhood and family support being the theme of this committee and how important it is that we really do everything we can that's in our power to to get kids off to the right start. And I think, you know, the fact that, you know, child care is hard to find, and it's especially how you can't, that you can't get it under 6 weeks unless it's kith and kin, and then most won't take it under 12 weeks. And people are really stuck. But, you know, families are very, very stuck, and they have to often leave a job in order to stay home with a child, and they lose tremendous amount of income during that time. Their job may be protected, but if they happen to work with an employer over 25 people, but it's very, very hard financially, and our families are so stressed out. And so I have full support for this bill, given that I think it's, you know, the policy has been worked on and worked on and worked on, and it's the best chance we have of really including low-income families that may be really struggling to, especially early in their life. I get your point about the retirement, and I think that was a really good point, because I hardly embraced that particular bill, and Representative Hack is right that her idea was more based on that. But I think people, when they're early on in their careers and really haven't built up a nest egg at all, I think it's very, very hard for them to be able to engage in that kind of policy. So that is why I have full support for this bill, knowing that there's financial challenges.
Thank you.
And they will be...
Rebuttal?
We'll let Representative Brock Smith go first.
All right.
Well, and I appreciate your comments, Representative. I appreciate the policy. I don't know that this is the vehicle, in my opinion. I preferred wanting to tease out the other vehicle that we don't have in front of us. But I do appreciate the comments on the financial piece, because as a, you know, small business owner, we're looking at 4.5 months with these Dash 2 amendments of leave, with the 12 weeks and the 6 weeks. That's a lot. That's a third. That's more than a third of the year. And that's a huge problem in the private industry, in my opinion. But I also look at the fiscal with regards to the report that the chair mentioned earlier. And, you know, Representative Hayden in his comments talked about $1 billion, and it's there. It's 1.2 is the estimate. $748 million to $1.12 billion, excuse me. But then I look at, you know, I'm a school board member as well down in Southwest Oregon, and I look at the effect that this is going to have on our public employers, which are state dollars as well, and how we're going to be able to pay for this. When we talk about early learning, we saw a cuts budget yesterday that we're cutting out, you know, early learning, millions of out of early learning, yet we're looking at new programs that are just going to add to that burden and add to the already private business burden, if you will, with regards to sick leave and so forth. So I really appreciate the discussion. I would have hoped that we would have been able to possibly, and I had a conversation where maybe we could have blended the two together. I think that at this point we're just trying to rush something through when we need to take a step back and possibly take pieces from each of the different concepts and put some fresh eyes on it and not rush this through. And those are my comments. Thank you.
We have 30 more minutes.
No, I
was going to point that
out. Don't give it to me.
Sorry, yeah. I couldn't resist.
Representative Hayden, did you want
to? I do, thank you, Chair Lively. I really appreciate the effort on this bill. Again, supportive of policy concept, but now that after 4 o'clock yesterday, I think it is reasonable to view the proposed budget coming forward, or adjustments, however you want to term that. One thing that I noticed on there that I think is reasonable to talk about as we talk about expanding benefits for public employees and private employees, we have a proposal to count Social Security income against people's SNAP and TANF benefit. I mean, are you kidding me? We have a proposal to count a very small Social Security income so that we can roll people off of TANF and SNAP benefits. And we're talking about $1.2 billion for public employees in addition to a private burden. I just can't balance those two equations.
Representative Hack.
Thank you, Chair. While I've made my position very well known, I'm not going to beat a dead horse, so to speak. It is disheartening, though, to not have moved both forward. I think if we were going to move one forward, we should have moved both forward and taken our time to possibly take a look at both avenues to come up with a better solution, because I think we're going to walk out of this building with nothing. And that's unfortunate. And oftentimes that's how politics play out. And in my mind, policy should come first, and we should do what's best for Oregonians. And it saddens me to think that with a fiscal of 1.12 and the cuts that are being taken, we could have walked out with something that didn't have a fiscal but would have provided folks with an avenue of having something that could work toward providing for their needs. And instead, we're going to walk out probably with nothing. So with that, again, I've spoke my piece before, and I'll leave it at that. But it's unfortunate that it had to be that way.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Any Representative Huffman?
Mr. Chair, I've been quiet.
Yes, you have.
And, you know, one of the reasons I'm in this body is because of my background as a small business guy, and I've heard a lot of testimony and discussion about, you know, the policy, and we all, you know, it's the name of the committee, Family Supports, that's why we're here. But as somebody that for decades ran a business that generally had 12 full-time people and 3 part-time, if somebody was out sick, I filled in. Mm-hmm. I didn't have one or two stringers out there that could come in and fill the bill. If I had an employee that was out for maternity purposes, I filled in. I've been in my radio station everything from a full charge bookkeeper to the traffic director to on air in the morning to the news director, the tower climber, 250 feet in the air changing light bulbs. Actually, it was 288 feet, but you know, when you're that high up, few extra feet doesn't matter. When you fall, it's the same result. So lots of good talk about the policy, but the reality, and in the Gorge back in 1985, my radio station was not a small business. We didn't have in situ and CloudCap and some of the bigger tech firms, Google, you know, the industries that the big industry was aluminum, and they employed 1,200 people. Mm-hmm. And then there was my radio station, you know, a Fred Meyer and an occasional other, but I was probably one of the top employers. And to not, even at 12 full-time people and 3 part-time, to be able to just not have the capacity to cover the bases when somebody was out. I'm just sharing that perspective. I know that this bill touched on that and whatnot, but there are business realities for small businesses that I could have had one or two floaters around if I'd paid my people less, but nobody ever under my employee applied for food stamps or other social benefits. I was one of the highest paying people in the Gorge. Family wage jobs, benefits, retirement. I mean, I really stepped up and did what I could. But to make that work, everybody really had to work, and I had to do double time many weeks, many days to cover the bases. And I just didn't hear that perspective much over the last few weeks, and I just wanted to get that on the record that it's challenging. You know, if you're going to be that small and that constrained, should you not be in business? I don't know. One could argue, I guess. If it's going to be that tight, maybe shouldn't be in business. But at the same time, for 22 years, I provided a lot of families good support.
Thank you. Representative Malmstrom, did you have?
Yeah, I might as well chime in.
You might as well.
You know, I agree with Representative Hack and the frustration that we're probably going to walk out of this session without anything going. And I realize a number one barrier is funds, but I see this committee is not trying to prioritize one thing above or below, say, food stamp people being cut off. I mean, our job isn't to decide how worthy compared to something else this is. That's for another group. I think that I keep coming back to the fact that all the other industrialized cars pretty much in this world can figure this out. And I'm hoping, you know, if not now, sometime in the future, Oregon can lead the way on how to figure this out. And so I want to be able to go back to my constituents and say, hey, I tried to vote for this. You know, if it fails here, it fails. You know, in the next step, at least I can say I tried.
Thank you. Representative Peluso.
Thank you, Chair Lively. So I look at this from a completely different perspective. My district is the seat of poverty in Multnomah County. There are people who are unable to get medical assistance, let alone medical leave. There's a huge piece of the puzzle in our state that is grossly underserved. And in order to keep employees, I would think you would want healthy employees. And again, I don't have the numbers or the facts to really back up what I'm saying, but I think we're just missing a huge piece. We are trying to serve people, keep them employed, keep them at work, doing their jobs for the betterment of their communities and their raising of their children and those sorts of things. And I just have not heard that mentioned at all from this dais over the course of this conversation. So I strongly support this bill. I do believe, again, it will grow opportunities for employment for others. They will have the opportunity to stay healthy. And just because there's an amount of time that this bill's allowed for the medical leave doesn't mean they're going to take it all. So we're jumping to some conclusions that are of concern to me. Bottom line, I support it. I support it as an advocate for my district and the people that I serve, as well as the people that I see throughout this entire state who are struggling on poverty, and we need to fix that as well. But so I strongly support the bill.
Anything further? Representative Brocksmith.
Thank you. I just want to kind of echo Representative Huffman's comments, actually, as a former small business owner myself, roughly 14 employees full-time, paid them family wages, wasn't able to offer the health insurance and others, unfortunately. We in Southwest Oregon don't really have a lot of ability to do that in some of our small businesses. I can tell you, Representative Peluso, that this bill will close businesses in my district.
I don't challenge that.
A lot of the businesses that are in my district are barely hanging on. We're still 6.4% below mean zero pre-recession. I've said this before in this committee. You know, I have the eighth most impoverished school district in the nation in my district that I'm the school board member of. This will cause teachers to have to go. And so I certainly believe in the policy. This is the wrong vehicle because of those things that it will do to my district and the people that are struggling because we can't utilize the natural resources that built the communities. We can't shift to the tourism-driven economy because of the folks that won't allow us to utilize the tools that and the resources that we have. And so this just puts an undue burden. I had a restaurant lounge. I'm a chef by trade. I would be doing what Representative Huffman. I'd be, in the kitchen one day and bartending the next day, and we work together. And all the other employees did as well. And now I know that that's not other larger corporations that are in the metro area, but if we're going to move policy, which I agree with, the policy needs to be good policy for the entire state.
I agree.
And not just for an area of the state. And this is not good policy for the entire state. I will support policy that's good for the entire state, but I can't support it when this is going to close businesses in my district. And it's going to take teachers away from my students. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Bynum. You get the last word.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe that the conversation on paid family medical leave is actually part of a national conversation that we need to be having. And so to kind of follow up on Representative Brock Smith's point about what we decide needs to be good for Oregon, I think it also needs to be good for our country. So even if we leave the session and we don't have anything, I still think it's incumbent upon us to push nationally because it's not an issue that just affects Oregonians. And I think that we should continue to look for ways, whether it's in this body or at our federal level, to support families, to support people's ability to earn a fair living, and to support our kids from their earliest days and our parents through their latest years. So I'm a supporter of looking for ways to just continue the conversation, always making sure that we balance who's paying for what and what society benefits. So
thank you. Nobody said making policy would be easy, did they?
No.
No. So could I have a motion on the amendment, please?
Yes, sir.
Also.
Chair Lively, I move to adopt the -2 amendments dated April 10th, 2017.
Representative Peluso moves to adopt the -2 amendments to House Bill 3087 dated April 10th, 2017. Is there discussion on the amendment?
Object. Just want to show objection to the...
Oh, you're objecting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's... I hadn't asked for objections yet, though, but okay. Well, we'll have a vote. We'll do a roll call vote. If there's no discussion, further discussion on the amendment, let's call the roll, please.
Representative Bynum?
Aye.
Representative Hayden?
No.
Representative Huffman?
No.
Representative Kenny Geyer?
Aye.
Representative Malmstrom?
Aye.
Representative Brock Smith?
No.
Vice Chair Hack?
No.
Vice Chair Peluso?
Aye.
Chair Lively?
Aye. So the amendment is approved. So, Representative Peluso.
Chair Lively, I move House Bill 3087 as amended to the floor without recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Revenue by prior reference.
Representative Peluso moves House Bill 3087 as amended to the floor without recommendation and the bill be referred to the Committee on Revenue by prior reference. Is there discussion of the motion? Seeing none, please call the roll. Oh, excuse me.
Well, I just want to put on the record again the earlier testimony that I had in opposition to this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further discussion of the motion? Please call the roll.
Representative Bynum.
Aye.
Representative Hayden.
No.
Representative Huffman.
No.
Representative Kenny Geyer.
Aye.
Representative Malmstrom.
Aye.
Representative Brock Smith.
No.
Vice Chair Hack?
No.
Vice Chair Peluso?
Aye.
Chair Lively?
Aye. Motion carries, and I'll close the work session on House Bill 3087. Before we adjourn, members, I just want to give you a little update on a few things we're going to be dealing with going forward. So we're going to have a work group, and we'll be announcing the members of that, but a work group to deal with looking at the makeup of the Early Learning Council and some of the issues around where we're at today versus that. Going to have a presentation on Thursday on developmental screenings. We'll have a presentation from the Treasury on a 529 savings accounts to understand how that relates to a conversation we had earlier. Then we're going to ask this committee to review the budget. Representative Hayden, maybe others have mentioned what's at what's at stake right now with where the budget is at. So we're going to have a discussion about this committee so we can provide feedback to the Ways and Means and the Sub and what we feel that means. And then we're going to have a presentation on a market rate study to inform the RDC. Thank you, Representative Hayden. We're going to have that too. So there's several things we're going to, over the next few meetings, have the conversation to talk about to get us prepared to talk about some other issues going forward in the next session. So
appreciate
thank you
that.
For your patience and your conversations.
Thank you.
Anything further? Your conversations.
Thank you.
Anything further?